That's not just the sound of that first sip of Morning Joe. It's the sound of someone shopping for a car on Carvana from the comfort of home.
That's a good blend.
It's time to take it easy, like answering some easy questions to get pre-qualified for a car in minutes.
Talk about starting the morning right.
Just like customizing your terms so your car fits your budget.
Mm-mm-mm.
Visit Carvana.com or download the app to experience car shopping the way it should be. Convenient. Comfortable. Ah.
Acast powers the world's best podcasts. Here's a show that we recommend.
What is The Briefing Room?
It's a behind-the-scenes look at how the criminal justice system works and the lives of the people within that system.
If you love true crime, well, these are the real people who do the job every day of making sure justice is served.
Hi, I'm Detective Dave.
I'm Detective Dan. Together, we have decades of experience in local law enforcement, a profession that we think is often misunderstood.
So we're going to explore how to do it right, and we won't shy away from when it's done wrong. These are stories you'll hear nowhere else. Unique, frank, and unvarnished.
From the team that brought you Small Town Dicks, this is The Briefing Room. Episode 1 drops on August 30th. We'll meet you in The Briefing Room.
Acast helps creators launch, grow, and monetize their podcasts everywhere. Acast.com.
Welcome back to Little Cuts, our weekly mini-sode where we dig into the things that we've been watching recently. I'm tired. I mean, Terry.
Hi, I'm Mary Beth. And it has been a long week of Sundance and very heavy movies. In the chat, we have Purpurina asking if festival movies tend to be heavy in general. And the answer is yes.
A lot of times it seems like it. Especially with, I would say, like, more high profile festivals.
Yeah.
It's like, if that makes sense. Like Sundance, I feel like there's a lot of heavy shit.
Yeah.
Sometimes.
Ring ring. Who is that? We have a guest.
Who's at the door?
We have a guest.
You have Hello? A guest.
Hello.
Oh my goodness.
Hello. It's the devil. He has a word. Look at my new friend.
I love him.
And for those of you listening, well, you could see this if you subscribe to our Patreon and see the video.
Hey.
But I'll use my words to explain to you what this is because I'm kind. It is the chatterer phone from Skinamarink, the creepy phone boy that is like
him.
$10 on Etsy.
Oh, is it really?
Yeah. If you look it up now, because I feel like they're going to start skyrocketing in price because everyone wants
Google
one of these fucking
Skinamarink
things. I Googled. So I tried. I actually, it took me a little bit because people were like, what the hell? It's the chatterer phone from Fisher Price.
Okay.
And so when you pull it, like, when you do that, when you pull it, its eyes, like, go, like, move. See?
Oh, no. That's horrifying.
So, yeah, this is my new friend.
But I love him.
So do I. He's terrifying.
Are you going to name him?
Kevin.
Kevin.
What's the kid's name in Skinamarink?
His name is Skinamarink.
Kevin is the kid's name in Skinamarink that this fucking thing tortures. That's why his name is Kevin. Anyway, so that's the first thing before we get into festivals. And then I had another before we jump in. Oh my god. It looks like someone chewed on this. Anyway, this is what you get for buying used toys online. And also, when I was trying to open it, I was like shaking the box and it was ringing a little bit. And I was like, this is the most haunted experience of my entire life. And Steve was laughing. He was like, why do you keep bringing weird toys into this house? I have like a couple like cursed looking dolls on my desk. So anyway, and then transitioning to my dumb story that I remember this like before we talk about festivals. I was watching a TikTok about hair dye and, like, spray-on hair dye, and I had this memory unlocked of when I was a kid, and I went to Hot Topic and saw hair dye, and I was like, oh my god, I'm gonna dye my hair at my friend's house, and my mom is like, I'm gonna come home and have, like, my hair dyed. My hair was this color, wasn't bleached, I knew nothing about it, and so I bought this bottle, and I was like, fuck yeah, like, it's a temporary hair dye. Remember that for later. I was like, okay, cool. So, like, it'll stay in for a bit, and then it'll wash out. And so we go to my friend's house. My friend's house being his dad's houseboat. So I'm in someone's giant houseboat with this bottle of hair dye in this tiny sink. And I'm like, oh, yeah. And I top pop off the top and it's a spray can. And I'm like, oh, how does this work? I thought temporary spray on hair color was actually hair dye. And I spent 2 hours trying to dye my hair with temporary hair dye when it was literally just paint in a can.
Oh, no.
It's like the dumbest memory of all time. But I just remember like being so pissed I couldn't dye my hair and then realizing that it was like temporary like costume hair. It was costume like hair color. It wasn't even hair dye. And my friend was watching anime laughing at me like, what are you doing wrong? And then we realized I can't read. So that's Mary Bass memory corner.
Back when I had hair, I remember deciding that I wanted to go strawberry blonde one time, and it was orange. I looked like a fucking pumpkin. I went to work the next day and everyone at work was like, you look like a pumpkin.
Thanks. I'm aware. Wait, did you have a beard?
No.
Okay, so it's like you should have just dyed your beard and gone full jack-o'-lantern.
Might have had a goatee. Yeah, I was a goatee lad.
I feel like everyone has a good, terrible hair dye
I also
story.
Did frosted tips, very briefly.
Purpurina. Gay rite of passage and stories
gay
to die
of passage.
For. Spelled D-Y-E. Mm. On that note, speaking of gay rites of passage, let's talk about... I don't know. Let's talk about... some movies from Sundance. This is going to be part one because we have watched so many good movies.
So many movies. How many did you say you've seen?
I've seen 16.
I've seen, I think, 18.
Yeah.
But two of them I watched while falling asleep on Ambien and I barely remember them. They were going to expire. I was like, fuck, I got to watch them.
I get it. Since we've watched so many, we're going to first talk about The Midnighters. This episode, yeah. Like the specific like horror section of the festival of the Sundance Festival program, and then next week we'll talk about all the other really cool shit we saw that is like maybe horror, maybe not. But yeah, I know that we're gonna watch more movies before next time. I know we're still in the process.
Yes.
There we go. We're still in the process of watching movies, so we'll have even more to talk.
And there's some ones that aren't genre related that I really want to talk about. So,
yeah.
I think that will be our focus next week, as well as, you know, Chucky, of course. But we also have Chucky tonight, and Chucky gets, it's fucked.
Thank God I watched all the movies. You're right. I wouldn't have gotten jack shit, but we'll talk about that in a bit.
All right. So let's just, because I think we've seen the same Midnight.
Yeah, I've seen all of them but one. There's one I haven't watched, and I'm sorry. I don't want to watch it. You'll, by the power of deduction, you'll know which one.
It's not great. Might have been the one that I fell asleep halfway through. What do we want to talk about first? Maybe the one that gets released today?
That is Brandon Cronenberg's Infinity.
Alexander Skarsgård on a leash.
Cock. Just a lot more cock than I expected.
Come. I was not expecting a cum shot.
It is a juicy movie. Yeah, so this is Brandon Cronenberg's third movie, arguably perhaps his most straightforward movie, where Alexander Skarsgård plays a failed author who is on vacation with his rich wife. They are on the fictional island of Latolka. Which is like kind of branded as almost like a communist country. It's never really gone into, but some of the iconography, I kind of like got big like Eastern Bloc country, but like Eastern Bloc vibes.
Yeah.
But they're on this beautiful resort for the rich, and they're in a compound, and the compound is protected by like super tall fences and barbed wire, and you're not supposed to leave the compound.
Wire. Yeah.
Basically, like, the locals are barbarians and you can't leave! You know. And then, of course, they meet a couple, Romia Goth. It plays the glamorous, scary Gabby. They go on a little joyride out of the compound. A manslaughter act happens and they discover that, murder slash any crime is, like, punishable by death. And then they find out if you're rich enough, you can just buy a body double, like a clone. It's not like totally, it's like very kind of vague about what's happening, about like what exactly is happening. Because the cloning sequence we get is just like him standing in like some liquid and then he kind of just sees shit
for a bit. It looks like really bad diarrhea.
It does. He's just,
is what it looked like.
And then he gets a little, a double, and then shit goes south from there. Violent and hot, sorta.
Very erotic.
Very erotic.
Even when it's, like, horrifying, there's still a... You know, it kind of reminded me in parts of, like, Brandon Cronenberg's take on Eyes Wide Shut. Oh. With, like, the man going on, like, a hedonistic, nightmarish journey through sex and violence and orgies and weird shit happening. And then hopefully trying to come out on the other side. Like, it reminds me a bit of that.
Yeah, it's...
But sci-fi.
Yeah, ish. It's another one of those, like, soft sci-fi movies in a way where it's, like, not predominant. It's, like...
Really about the
it's,
sci-fi.
It's, like, it is, like, predominantly sci-fi, but not really. Like, it's not... Like, it's, like, obviously...
It's not about...
Cloning machines and things like that. It's more, like, how people abuse that kind of... Not even technology, because it's, like, a secret. A secret, like, about them having it. I don't know. It's very strange, but I love that. And, like, I don't need to compare, but it does have Crimes of the Future vibes with, like, the setting and kind of, like, the vibes about what's happening. Okay. And, like, I know that, like, comparing them. Oh, you haven't seen it yet?
I need to.
So I really enjoyed it. Alexander Skarsgård's kind of a little wiener in it too. He's like a little bit of, like, a little pathetic worm, and I love it. Love it.
I love him. I love him so much. And I'll tell you, Mia Goth is unhinged in this.
Jamesy!
She just approaches this role and just tears it apart. I was not expecting this performance from her. Like, great in X, great in Pearl, but this is like...
Yeah, this is like...
Another level. This is fucking unhinged in the best way.
So I interviewed her about this, and she said it was a really hard role because the character is so opposite of her, like, in all aspects. And I think in, like, X and Pearl, there's, like, I think she can... there seems to be, like, a more kind of personable side, but then with Gabby, like, she's just a full-on, like, sociopath.
Yes.
It's incredible. I love it. We have a beautiful female villain who just loves to jack dudes off and kill. Good for her. Good for her.
The feminist agenda.
It is. I'm gonna bleach my eyebrows now. But yeah, so if you can see that in theaters, it's out today. I do kind of want to see it in theaters. I feel like it'd be a wild experience in a theater. So I might go see it again.
I agree. I don't think it's as, like, heady as
It's not. I think it, like...
Possessor. It's very straightforward.
Yeah. It's very much, like, very obviously being, like, look, the rich use... Like, the super rich use people, and even if you think you're in their inner circle, you're just a fucking plaything. Like, it's super straightforward, but I think he does it in such a cool way visually.
Yeah.
And, like, to, like, a very big extreme that it's just, like, hell yeah. I'll take that.
Not everything could be Possessor. Not everything should be, so...
No. Sometimes I just want a straightforward, ultraviolet movie.
And speaking of a straightforward, ultraviolet movie, let's talk about Talk to Me.
Oh my God.
Talk to the Hand, literally.
I quit. I quit. This one, I think, is perhaps my favorite of the festival so far.
Okay.
I think. As of the current situation we are talking, it is my favorite of the festival.
I think it's my favorite of the Midnighters.
Okay. It's definitely my favorite of the Midnighters. Strong cast of contenders for Midnighters, but this one is, like, a fucking lean... Was it lean? Yes, lean. The lean, mean horror machine that is... It's from Australia. We love Australian horror. We have a couple of those, actually, to talk about. But basically... This movie follows a group of teenagers who have come into possession of an embalmed hand of a psychic/medium, which is, like, it sounds so ridiculous, but the way they frame it is really interesting. So, and it kind of goes viral, like, in their area, where, like, people can hold the hand and they become a conduit for a spirit, but they have some rules to make sure, like, bad things don't happen in terms of, like, what it means to your body to be possessed for longer than, I think, like, 60 seconds.
90 seconds. 90 seconds. Yeah.
But so people are taking videos of this at parties. Like, it's a party trick. It's not just, like, it's funny to them.
New drugs.
It's, yeah, it's, like, exactly. And people, like, want to hit.
Their eyes get dilated. Yep. The black parts of their eye just, like, take over their entire eye. They get possessed by the spirits. And it's like a party. It's a parlor trick. It's like, for them, it's something fun to do.
Yep. And so, but they take it too far, as you can expect. But when they take it too far, it's fucked up. Like, it's like, the story is relatively simple, but it is mean. Like, it's.
Oh, it's very mean.
And it's scary. Like, this is the scariest movie of the festival, by far. And I love that. It's not.
Shouted at one point.
Yeah, exactly. I did too.
And I gasped at some of the the self-inflicted violence, shall we say, at some points.
I know.
Just, like, really, I was like, oh my god. Like, this movie came with a warning in front about, like, blood and violence. And the last time that I saw a movie at a festival that did that, it was The Sadness. And this is not at the sadness level.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
However, there is a lot of red and there is a lot of horrifying moments in this.
Happening to teenagers slash, like, yes. People who are, you know, like, early teenagers and who look like teenagers. But Josh Korn got described it as, like, punk Australian Insidious.
Okay. I could see that. I was feeling like Flatliners for the social media.
Yeah, guy. That is very much it. Yeah, that one is that's been my favorite, one of my favorites so far. But then there's another Australian Midnight.
I think it's being bought by A24
potentially. Yeah, they're in talks to buy it, which makes sense. Talks. And I hope it gets a theatrical, because this is a really
This needs to be a
theatrical. It's a good movie to see with people. Like, I want to see it on a screen with a bunch of people, because, like, some really fucking good moments. And, like, good jump scares. Yeah. Mm-hmm. I love it.
It's gnarly.
But then there's another Australian film that I unfortunately did not like as much. Run, Rabbit, Run, directed by Dana Reed. What did you think of this one?
I think Sarah Snook is very good in this movie.
Yes. Cool. Yeah, I think that's about the consensus that the internet has had, that she's incredible, but the material is not great.
Some people...
and Netflix bought it, which is, like, I kind of got a feeling before I even watched it. Sorry, but, like, Netflix horror movies have a reputation now. They don't buy the good, like, the best shit anymore.
So I've heard some people call this boring. I actually was never bored watching it. I really was like...
Yeah, I would agree with
that. I was on board with what was happening. I don't know. I don't feel like it really did anything new.
No, so it's from the producers of The Babadook. And that's so obvious as you watch it. It's like...
Oh, absolutely.
Your typical mom and daughter have a weird relationship and something happens and there's trauma and a creepy kid and mom drama and dead siblings.
A rabbit shows up. The kid starts dressing like with a rabbit face that doesn't have a mouth, and there's horrible drawings being made. Like, it's hitting all of these very familiar beats, and it doesn't really do anything new to it.
It's just kind of boring. It's not boring. I just think it's like... There's a lot of cool stuff at the beginning that they just let go of. Like, I thought there was some really cool things to say about, like, estranged mother relationships and what happens when that person gets dementia. Because, like, my greatest fear is when my estranged dad gets older and I have to, like, I'm his only kid. So, like, that fucked me up at the beginning. And I was like, okay, cool, we're going to keep going with this. And then they just, like, drop it completely for, like, a kind of typically boring narrative, to which I say, just watch Lake Mungo. If you want something like this, like, fucking watch Lake Mungo, because that's what this is trying to be. Like, that's all I could think about, was, like, this is trying to be a version of Lake Mungo, whether they knew it or not. Obviously, The Babadook too, and they just, like, didn't know what to do with it at all.
Yeah.
Which is a bummer. Yeah,
it's unfortunate. It is.
But, like, it's just not...
Another movie that has, like, a mother-daughter relationship that I thought did work was Birth/Rebirth, which I really dug. It's produced by, at least one of the producers on it was Molly Elfman, who did Next Exit last year that I really loved and was on my top list. She's producing this. But you can see some of the similar team, because Ariel Marks does the score for this. Ariel Marks also did the score for Next Exit, and she also did the score for Shiva Baby. And
Ariel Marks, the score is really good. I'm obsessed with her.
She really is.
Her music is so good.
I would love to chat with her. But yeah, so this was directed by Laura Moss and then co-written by Laura Moss and Brendan and Jay O'Brien. It is basically a gender flipped Frankenstein story in a way. Of, like, this scientist that is trying to bring people back from the dead, and there is a prenatal nurse, is that?
Like, obstetrics nurse.
Yeah, whose daughter ends up getting sick. This is the one part that didn't really gel with me. She gets sick and dies very quickly.
She had bacterial meningitis, that's why.
I know, but it was, like, overnight. Is it that quick?
It can be, I think.
Is it? Okay. I was just like, wow, that's medicine.
But yeah, it can be really bad. Really, it can get really bad really
fast. She was fine, and the next day she was dead.
Yeah, I think that's actually possible.
Jesus. Okay.
Fact check me if I'm wrong, then... please. I'm not a doctor.
And then the body does not make it to its final place because the mortician has taken it and has brought it back to life. And then the mortician... mom finds out and...
Oh, yeah. The mom finds out and, like, yeah. But I was going to say, the mortician played by Maren Ireland from The Dark and the Wicked.
Yes. So good in this.
She's incredible.
She's in two movies at Sundance
this year. She is. Okay, thank you to Purpurina for looking up people dying in as little as a few hours from bacterial meningitis. All right, cool.
Okay.
Sick.
There we go.
But
thank you.
Thank you so much. As if we couldn't have Googled it. But that's not fun. But yeah, so Maren Ireland is Dr. Rose Casper, who is the pathologist but works in the morgue. And then Julie Reyes plays Celie. Is that her name? Judy. Judy Reyes plays Celie, who is the mother.
Yes.
And they start forming this kind of like tentative... It's like, it never falls into friendship. And I think that's what's really cool about this movie is that it doesn't try to fall into like, they fall in love or like they become good friends. Like, they're always at a distance. And I like how it kind of keeps it cold because it really then kind of exemplifies the growth / changes in both characters quite a bit. I don't want to give too much away, but like, I love this movie. I think it's incredible.
In a way, there's sort of like... I mean, they're sort of like mothers for the kid, like co-parenting almost in a way with the kid. But it's like, it's held at arm's distance. And I think that it's like almost like a marriage, I'm using that in quotations, of like convenience in terms of like...
Like the odd couple comparison is one that people keep making, including myself in my review. Because it is very much like, okay, these two very different people come together and like live under the same roof and have to kind of like... learn how to work with each other in a weird scenario. But, because again, like, it is a pretty, like, familiar premise, but it's done in a really interesting way that it isn't, like, trying to force emotions on them in a way.
Yeah.
And I really like that.
Well, and they have very different motives for
it.
You know, one is, like, excited about recreating life. The other is, like, my daughter literally died and I wasn't there for that.
Yeah.
And she's like, I want my baby back. So, like, there's completely different motives going on here, and there's, like, a tension between the two of them. And I really liked it. This movie really, really worked for me.
Me too. This is Talk to Me and this are, like, my faves.
That makes sense.
Yeah. But then let's talk about more motherhood with a very different kind of movie, In My Mother's Skin, which I also really loved, but it's... fucked up and deeply upsetting, more than I expected.
Yeah, so this one, I mean, I think an easy comparison is to compare it to Pan's Labyrinth in a way.
Yeah.
It's less fantastical and more deeply fucked up, I would say, than like Pan's Labyrinth. Although Pan's Labyrinth has a gut punch of an ending, it's more it's in the Philippines, World War II.
Japanese occupation.
A young girl. Well, this family is in this like manor, the secluded manor, where a treasure might be hidden in the house, and people want it. Her father, this girl's father, goes into town, and he's talking about coming back, and he doesn't. Then her mom gets sick, and she has a younger brother, and so she goes out to try to find some solution. And she comes across a lady in a dilapidated hut, ends up summoning flesh-eating fairies?
That look like cicadas?
Yeah. And it's gross.
It's gross.
And sad.
It's so sad. It's dark. Production design is awesome. with the design of like, I was calling the being the queen of the cicadas, because they have like this really cool headpiece that looks like it has cicada wings coming out of the top. And I think something that I really liked about this as well is like, it's a lower budget movie, but, and so what it does, instead of like showing you everything, it does, it puts a lot of work into the sound design, I think, to make things really gross. So even though you're not seeing a lot of blood and gore in certain parts, not to say that there isn't it, but like they're really careful with how they do that. So, and it's gross. Like some of the scenes where you just hear things happening, it's like, ugh.
I really dug it. Yeah. On a more like upbeat note though, Polite Society.
I loved this movie. It was so fun. I liked it so much more than I expected.
Yeah, me too.
Yeah, so it is, it's like basically like a Jane Austen movie, but like in a contemporary Pakistani family where the younger sister Ria is training to be a stunt person. Her sister, who lives at home, is an artist and an art school dropout and like doesn't have any prospects. Her mother and father like want her to get married, you know, like it's got that typical like looking at like South Asian, like Pakistani family dynamics in a contemporary setting. Mm-hmm. And at first it is kind of like one of those coming of age things of like, oh, you hate your sister's fiance and you're trying to do anything you can to like foil the plot. And then there's a fucking twist in the middle that takes it to like full action movie, full action movie. And it's so fun. It's like the perfect action movie for like the whole family. And I don't mean that in like it's a kid movie, but it's like a mature action film that takes kids seriously. So like adults will really love it, but it's not like super gory and like super heavy. It balances that really well into something that's like really fucking fun. And everyone's so good in it.
Yeah, everyone is incredibly good in it. And Priya Kansara plays Ria, the main character, and she is just a ball of energy. And she pretty much gives the movie it's not to say it again, but it's energy. Like she's very charismatic and she carries this movie. I will say that I think that some of the energy dies down in the like transition to the third act.
I think that they take it too long. They take the whole like
I was ready for it to be over at a certain point, and then it like comes back and it gets that energy again for the climax. But it's a lot of fun. It's kind of like in some ways reminded me a little bit of Scott Pilgrim.
Yeah.
In the way that like it has like a kinetic feel to it. There's a lot of like stylish flourishes where it's like when she fights someone, it's versus like the verses, and it's like almost like a fighter video game presented. So it has that kind of like feel to it that I think people will remember from Scott Pilgrim. It's not as frenetic as that, or is like outlandish in a lot of ways. I mean, there's some outlandish parts in it, but I don't know. It just, it has that feel to it, just in a more indie type feel.
Yeah, you know, I agree that like the first half to like 2/3 is a little bit too long. I think they save a lot of really cool stuff for the end that I wish had been like more consistent throughout the beginning.
Yeah.
But yeah, regardless, I had a ton of fun. This was a good palate cleanser for everything else that like we were watching, because good lord, there's some heavy shit. And then I think is this the last one for the Midnighters? Yeah. Speaking of heavy, we're finishing off this discussion of Sundance with Jacqueline Castell's queer werewolf movie, My Animal, that I really wanted to like more, unfortunately.
Yeah.
We
had talked offline, and it reminds me a bit of like Boys Don't Cry dropped into a werewolf movie.
And that is exactly like, what it is. That's like
the easiest comparison.
Well, yeah, because it's like, I mean, look, it's got really incredible performances by Bobby Salvador Menuez and then Amandalas Stenberg. Both queer, non-binary actors who are playing queer characters who are, like, trying to figure their shit out. I think it's got incredible, like, 90s vibes. There's a lot of, like, gay lighting. A lot of, like, beautiful, like, soft,
queer yearning in this movie. Like, it's a really good gay drama, and then the werewolf stuff kind of feels tacked on a little bit. I could see where they were going, but it just misses the mark. Like, it just fizzles out in a way that's really disappointing. Like, it feels like it's building to something really cool, and it kind of just, like, a little bit to me.
Which when it ended, I was like, that's, it's over. Like,
I know, I was the same
it
way.
It just does not, doesn't it hit. Sets up, like, this house of cards, and then it just sort of, like, whiffs it at the very end.
Yep.
And, I don't know, I just, I feel like if, the idea of a werewolf is such a powerful metaphor for, like, otherness or for trying to conceal something inside of you. And I just, I don't, you add that with queerness. And on one hand, I'm like, okay, I get it. You're conflating being a closeted queer person in the 90s with werewolf and lycanthropy. I get it. It's just, there's all these little pieces there, and I just don't think they threaded them together very well. It's a much better directed movie than I would say a written movie.
I would agree with that. I think I would definitely agree with that. Because, like, it seemed like a queer, like I said, a queer drama that they were like, oh, fuck, this would be a cool werewolf movie, but, like, didn't think about how to connect those two things together. Mm-hmm. Which is a bummer.
Yeah. It is a bummer, because there's a lot of really cool ideas in here. I just don't think it came together very well.
Well, let's do a sharp pivot to not Sundance.
Yes.
To our penultimate discussion of season one of Chucky with episodes 5 and 6, where things, like we talked about last time, things break bad even fucking worse.
Yeah, like I told you last week, to strap on / strap in. the last 4 episodes of this season just get brutal.
You fucking think? Jesus Christ, we lose 2 mothers. 2 parents.
2 mothers in a single episode.
Yes. What the fuck?
In a very vicious way.
Both of them.
Particularly, so we find out, you know, that Junior's mom has cancer, stage 4 cancer, that she's been keeping from the family. And then by episode 6, where she has decided that she's not going to take chemo, and she has told her family, and she's just going to, you know, see whatever happens. And Chucky fucking pushes her out of a window. And not only that, she falls on Junior's car, and her face goes through the fucking windshield in front of fucking Junior. I'm like, you're fucking mean, Don Mancini. This was fucking mean.
But then to add insult to fucking injury, you see something fall in the car next to it, like, oh, cool, that's her. And then it's like, nah, bitch, it's not her.
Nah,
like,
bitch.
As if these fucking kids haven't had enough trauma. Like, here, have your mom, who, like, just told you she wasn't gonna get treatment for her cancer. And she fucking smashes, and, like, I'd be like, you know what? I'm good. Reset. Just hit the reset button. Just leave.
And then Devin's mom gets pushed down the stairs and breaks her fucking neck.
Breaks her fucking neck. Like, that's, like, the worst thing about this series, and the, like, in a good way, is that, like, the only time that adults believe them is, like, right before they get savagely murdered.
Right before they get murdered.
You're like, well, I guess there's nothing else I can fucking do about that. But then on top of these, like, absolutely grisly murders, and Devin, like, finding out about Chucky, and starting to put the pieces together with, like, all of our cameos / characters, like, start coming in from past stuff. So we have, we get to see the backstory between Chucky and Tiffany. Oh my god, Chucky and Tiffany, and how they fucking met. Psychos. Goddamn psychos. Mm-hmm. With Fiona.
Psychos in love.
Fiona Dourif playing her dead.
Adding more to the gender-bending queerness of this, where you have, like, her playing Charles Lee Ray, Mackinac and Tiffany in the past, and then you have Nika, Mackinac and Tiffany, as both Nika and Chucky in the present. It's like a sapphic dream.
It's my sapphic dream.
Fucked up
oh,
sapphic
oh,
dream.
Oh, yeah. Like,
as we'll get to soon.
In the most chaotic timeline, it's very much, like... But yeah.
But then we also have fucking Andy Barclay showing up and Kyle.
They're like fucking FBI. Like, it's like fucking Mulder and Scully, like traveling the country yeah. trying to end the reign of Chucky. It's so funny when they fucking shoot the doll. Oh, God. It's.
And they're just standing over them almost in like a Quentin Tarantino esque, like aiming down and just unloading like their bullets
fuck
into
you,
the doll.
Andy!
Fuck you, Andy.
It's so good. It's just, I love how they're folding it all together now. Like, they really have done a good job
yeah.
setting it all up, like, not trying to rush into fan service, I think. Because I think a lot of shows, like, you know, based on these kinds of properties can really try to be like, we have to give the fan service. But it's like, Chucky himself is already, I feel like, enough fan service. And, like, having these other characters come in when it actually logically makes sense rather than trying to, like, shoehorn it in, I think right. is, like, a really a testament to, like, the pacing and the writing of the show.
It reminded me a bit of Curse of Chucky, how it's, like, it almost feels like it could be a reboot.
Yeah.
And then eventually, the you know, it, in that movie, the skin comes off of the doll and you find out that, no, it is a continuation.
Yeah.
And then other characters start coming in from the past. Mm-hmm. And that, I think this one does this incredibly well because we are now, you know, I think this, they start to show up at like what, episode six is kind of where.
Yes.
Like a little bit in five.
A little bit. I think it was a little bit like in five the, and then it goes into six is when we really see, especially the two of them like in real life. Because we get introduced
yeah.
to Tiffany as Jennifer Tilly / Jennifer Tilly as Tiffany as Jennifer Tilly.
Yeah.
Yes, that's it. I was trying to think of like the uh-huh. order of operations here, but yes. So we meet her, and we see Nika. Who? Here's what fucks me up in this fucking shit. How is it's like he is in Nika, but then he's also in the doll. And I understand that like we have split things up in Cult of Chucky, but like
in Cult of Chucky,
in what
yeah.
God? Like, where are the consequences with the voodoo being that he's talking to? Like, I know that this is like so like nitpicky and dumb, but all I can think of is like whatever cosmic shit you're praying to, just like, yeah, fucking do whatever you want. Like, that's awesome. Good for him for finding that. Cause I feel like in most things there's consequences for like constantly using that power. And like, I mean, good for you. It just like boggles the mind that it's like, yeah, just it's fucking fine. Just split it up.
Oh man, I cannot wait until more happens with this.
I just don't understand how it works. Like, who is the real Chucky? You know what I mean? Are they all the real Chucky? Is Nika the real Chucky? Like, who who's the real Chucky, man? Who's the real Charles Lee Ray?
I mean, I think that is a question that deserves like a joint and just sort of sitting back and being like, yeah, man.
Maybe I was stoned when I had that thought, okay? But like, I think it's a valid question.
It is a valid question. Absolutely.
I understand that this is a fucking show franchise about a haunted doll.
About a haunted doll. Real Chucky's friends we made along the way. Thank you, Purple.
Yeah, it's true. Anyway, off the
My favorite part about this though is here's how you make the best alarm system known to man. Step one, find the creepiest doll you can find. Step two, attach wire to it to all of the doors so that it will turn on its own. And then step three, burn everything to the ground because fuck that. But like, this is this doll that they have set up in the middle of the room with like wires attached to windows and doors so that the doll will like turn if Chucky is here. I'm like, that's creepy as fuck. That's creepier than Chucky.
Uh-huh. It's true. Oh, and also Jake and Devin had their first little smoochy smooch.
They had their little smoochy
Yay,
smooch.
Love. I love their relationship. It's so cute. I love that they're
it's
like
very cute.
There's obviously homophobia in some parts of it, but like it's not like sorry, after Jake's dad dies, like it kind of isn't as like queer bashing and it is a little bit more like you guys
right.
like each other. And I like that we're not trying to like make this all about like, oh, the gay kids, you know? That makes me happy that in this day and age we can make a show about queers. Young baby queers especially that are like yeah having a hard time but like can also have these relationships without being constantly ridiculed. It's just nice to see it, you know.
It is nice. We've also talked about like the needle drop song moments in this.
Oh, heads will
and
roll.
The end of episode 5, heads will roll. Yes.
I was like,
oh my God.
This show is everything to me. The fucking, like, that, I mean, God damn.
Bringing in the yeah, yeah, yeahs with heads will roll a fucking head rolls.
The fucking principal gets decapitated.
And it's a split diopter.
Oh.
With like the head in the front and then the reactions behind. It's just like,
It's just so good. The show is incredible. It's just, yeah, I don't know. It's just so good. So much happened. There's two more episodes left.
The pacing
is really good. I've never felt, this is one of the first shows in a long time that I've been like, oh, I've never actually like kind of felt bored. I feel like it's moving along really well.
It's just constantly moving. It's adding complications.
Yeah.
It's changing the script. Yeah. It is doing things that television doesn't do. We had two moms die in a single episode, and it's gonna get worse. Like, there is actual stakes here in this teen-centric show about a fucking 40-year-old doll.
Weird.
Like, it's just,
it's good.
It's so good.
So good.
It's so good.
So we are watching the last two episodes, and I'm just so nervous for what are going to happen. I know that our three main babies survive, but at what cost is kind of where, like, my brain's at. Like, at what cost for these poor, poor little babies? Because I know things break real bad. But any who's it. Yeah.
It's vicious.
So,
yeah. So next week we're going to continue talking about Sundance, because there's a lot of movies that are not genre or genre adjacent that I really am excited to talk about. And like I said, I'm going to probably watch, I think, two more movies tomorrow night that I'm hoping will be really good. So
next week we are talking to Paul Owens, the writer and director of Landlocked. And he brought with him Bram Stoker's Dracula. And as you can imagine, Go to Horny Jail is very much a theme of the episode. Shocking no one.
I mean, you know, this last week it was horny ducks, and this week it's horny
I completely everyone. Forgot that I talked about that corkscrew duck penis thing, and I am so glad to be reminded of it, because I'm glad that my weird animal penis knowledge can be utilized for good and also evil.
And also evil, yes. We had recorded that episode of a while ago, because we had an opportunity to. And when I was editing it, I was laughing hysterically at some of the places the conversation went. Because duck penis, corkscrew, condoms. How'd that work?
It was an incredible experience. So go listen to that episode and then tune into our episode with Paul Owens.
And watch Landlocked this weekend.
It is so good. Check it out. It's like found footage, hybrid found footage, mumblegore, that good shit. So listeners, you've heard from us. We want to hear from you. Did you attend Sundance virtually or have tickets for anything and watched a film? Do you have any highly anticipated films coming out of Sundance? You can send us an email at scarredforlifepodcast@gmail.com, or you can find us on Twitter. You know where, at MBMcAndrews.
I'm a Gailey Dreadful.
And follow the podcast, at Scarred Podcast.
And don't forget to review, rate, and subscribe. And, you know, if you want to help us out some more, join us on Patreon. You could be watching. You'd be able to see the Skinamarink. Kevin, you'd be able
like
to see my gay and wonderful
the
hat.
Skinamarink.
The Skinamarink.
He is the Skinamarink. That,
he is the Skinamarink.
Thank you to Eric Power for music. Thank you to Sean Keller. Nope. Why? Why do I switch them?
I was like, that does not sound right.
I know. I was like, I said it. And I was like, Thank you to Eric Power for our artwork. Thank you to Sean Keller for our music. Thank you, everyone, for listening. Please stay safe out there. Most importantly, stay creepy.
And until next time.
Oh, won't somebody please think of the children? We'll be right back.
Acast powers the world's best podcasts. Here's a show that we recommend.
What is The Briefing Room? It's a behind-the-scenes look at how the criminal justice system works and the lives of the people within that system. If you love true crime, well, these are the real people who do the job every day of making sure justice is served. Hi, I'm Detective Dave.
I'm Detective Dan. Together, we have decades of experience in local law enforcement, a profession that we think is often misunderstood.
So we're going to explore how to do it right, and we won't shy away from when it's done wrong. These are stories you'll hear nowhere else. Unique, frank, and unvarnished.
From the team that brought you Small Town Dicks, this is The Briefing Room. Episode 1 drops on August 30th.
We'll meet you in The Briefing Room.
Acast helps creators launch, grow, and monetize their podcasts everywhere. Acast.com.